All right, so we are back in the book of Nehemiah. We're in Nehemiah 2. And it was D-Day, and I was looking over some stuff from Dwight D. Eisenhower. I saw this quote sitting out there. By the way, it's hard to believe that D-Day has been 70 years. Obviously, I wasn't around 70 years ago, but when I was a kid, we were talking about the 40th anniversary. We were talking about the 50th anniversary. It's hard to believe that these folks who sacrificed so much for us, it's been 70 years. The way time flies is quite amazing. But here's a quote from Dwight Eisenhower. I hope you catch it because the wording is what's important here. It says, "Leadership is the art of getting someone else to do something you want done because he wants to do it." And so we had a church. The pastor has a million things that he knows needs to get done in the church, and he has to find a way to give you the burden and for you want to do the work. We had a work day yesterday, and I'm just telling you, Pastor Brown and myself couldn't have got all that stuff done if you'd have given us most of the summer. Many hands makes for light work. And there's many things when you're a leader that you're burdened with that need to get done. And so the art here of leadership is getting someone else to do something that you want done because they want to do it. And it's a neat thought, and we'll explore that a little bit more. But as leaders, when we talked last week, you have to have a clear vision. And a clear vision is a problem being presented to you and then going before the Lord, especially with a big problem, with prayer and fasting and mourning and weeping and dealing with the problem with a sincere heart. And then God will present something clearly to you. Look on something with your eyes, having that clear vision. But once you have that clear vision, the next step here is you have to get people on board. So the title of this message is Getting the Ball Rolling. Getting the Ball Rolling. When we think about it, there's three things we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about organization, motivation, and delegation. And with organization or organizing, a leader needs to set up a system to allow his people to win. There's nothing worse than when someone tries to recruit your help. I think about moving. Moving's a big one. Someone goes, "Hey, will you help me move?" And you come on over and they're not ready and they're still packing up things. It's very frustrating and very demotivating to want to go help them. So if you ever help someone move and you show up and there's boxes all over the place, it's not a good thing. So be organized. Number two is motivating. That means you have to wear a funny hat and have the things that spit out. No, that's not it at all. Motivating. A leader needs to know how to get his team to do what he previously did not know was needed to be done. If that makes any sense, you'll have to listen to it on the MP3 or whatever on sermon audio. But really, Andy Krenz doesn't know what Pastor Brown's thinking. Pastor Brown, most of the time you know what you're thinking. Mrs. Brown doesn't know what he's thinking. The only person who knows what you're thinking is you. And so you have to go out and motivate people by telling you what's on your mind, and we'll explore that a little more too. And then delegating. A leader needs to know where to put people, and then empowering them and equipping them to succeed. Once you have people motivated to do the job, you have to make sure that you're setting them up for success. Not everyone is meant to be a preacher. Not everyone is meant to be a Sunday school teacher. Not everyone is built for fixing the different issues in the church mechanically. Like Pastor Brown does not ask me to fix the sprinkler system or anything like that. That would be a very bad thing. It'd be a very wet church right now. We'd have problems. So let's look at verses 6 through 8 in Nehemiah 2, and we'll read those aloud. And it says, "In a letter," or 6, excuse me, "And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, 'For how long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return?' So please the king to send me, and I set him a time. Moreover, I said unto the king, 'If it please the king, let letters be given me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come unto Judah. And the letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace, which were appertained to the house, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall enter into.' And the kings granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me." So the first thing we're going to talk about is organizing. Organizing is a big deal. Organizing is something that some people revel in. I bet if I asked for a raise of hands who liked organizing and who didn't, it's probably 50-50. Some people love organizing. Some people just, they can't wait to organize the next thing. They can't wait to get their hands on organizing. I've seen people put the different Tupperware containers in their pantry, and they label everything in the pantry, and it's got to be so and such. My version of organizing is taking everything that's on the counter and throwing it into the cupboard. Because if the door's closed, it's organized. If no one can see it, it's organized, right? Amen? No? People work differently when it comes to organization. And certain details need to be laid out. You'd be surprised at how much work there is in a vacation Bible school or a ride for life or doing a Sunday school or preparing a message. There's a lot of organization that needs to happen on all sorts of levels. And you miss that because when a leader does that work, it's behind the scenes. They do it ahead of time. And so last week we talked about the plea of Nehemiah that he made to Artaxerxes, and that Artaxerxes allowed for Nehemiah to take a leave. Here he works with those in authority over him to establish the boundaries that he would be allowed to work under and to help enlisting from that authority. Nehemiah had disclosed to the king the duration of the work. He says, I set him a time. When you're working with people, you have to set a time. Since he was able to work with the king in getting a temporary leave of absence, he'd set a time to account for certain goals. Fixing the walls, the gates, the words I set a time is the most important. We work with those over us when we schedule our time with them. Schedules can be broken. Have we ever scheduled something to happen and it runs over? Absolutely. It's okay. But at least there's a need for a goal to be shot at. Personally, if you have 3 months to type a paper, do you spend each day working on that paper each day? When do you spend most of the time on it? I don't know, probably like the last 5 minutes. Is there something on Google that I can steal this with? So setting a time helps us to move forward because we can naturally procrastinate. How many times have you said, hey, you know what? We'll get together sometime. You see someone out in public, we'll get together sometime. And how often does that happen? Little to none. You know what? We'll get together sometime. You need to set a time. You need to set a time with those that are in authority over you. You definitely need to set a time with those who are underneath you. You need to schedule time. Because when you don't schedule time, what happens inevitably is things get missed out. Things get left behind. I'm going to speak for myself. My daughter, Evelyn, she turns 6. Happy birthday, Evelyn. Hi. She turns 6, and every 3 years, I take my kids on a daddy-daughter date, and inevitably, I'm too busy to take them out on the day of their birthday. And so Evelyn, God bless her, she kept reminding her dad. So I made sure I had to set a time. Because if I went to set a time to take her on a daddy-daughter date, you know what I would have had? A very disappointed little girl. And we leave a lot of disappointed people out there because we don't schedule the time with them. Or we don't tell them how long a project's going to take. Yeah, I'll be over to help you with your house. I'll be over to help. And you never show up. A leader needs to know how to schedule his time. A leader needs to know that. I love that phrase. I set him a time. Number two is he set up materials of the job at hand. He further asked the king to give him a letter to obtain materials for the job. He needed raw materials. And you need to do it prior to getting the job going. It's another frustrating thing is when you come to help somebody out and they don't have all the materials and you make 3 runs to Menards and you make 4 runs to Lowe's and you're constantly going back and forth. Do you ever feel your time's being wasted? There's nothing better than when you go help someone out and everything's laid out really nice. It's a beautiful thing to see someone who organizes ahead of time. And so he set up the raw materials to be set up ahead of time. I love that idea. When you're hurrying around and when you're rushing around after the fact, it only leads to further problems when you're working on a project. It's necessary and to the best of your ability to line up things prior to the project. That means you need to be inclusive of those around you. A leader should have access to a team. I've been in projects where a leader wants to start a project and he kind of thumbs things up and he goes, oh, I think we'll need this much material. I think we're going to do it this way. So I'm going to order it all by myself. The best way to do things is when you include other people in it. And it doesn't necessarily say it here, but talk to other people who know things about that situation. If I'm going to ride a bike, am I going to ask Pastor Brown for advice? Yes, because I'm no expert on it. If Pastor Brown wants to ask me about the Packers, I can give him some advice. He's never going to ask me. But you go to the person who's the expert and you talk through it because it's going to help you better to order materials. It's going to help you in terms of better working with your folks because you may have a blind spot. Work with others when determining raw materials and things such as that or when you're working in a vacation Bible school. Talk to the people who actually have put their hands on the project because you're going to help them better be equipped, and we'll talk about that later. I don't believe we need to be, and this may be a little contrary, to be well-rounded people. I mean, individually. And by that I mean, I don't have to be an expert in every area. A leader doesn't need to be an expert in every area. Jack Welch, when he was talking about the GE way in the book there, he said, look, I don't need to know how to run a jet engine. I don't need to know how to make a jet engine, but I need to make sure I hire somebody who can make a jet engine. And for us as leaders and people in a church, we need to make sure that we don't have to know everything, but we better have people on our team that do know something and use them. I don't have to keep people on the sidelines. I don't have to be the guru of everything, but I have to make sure I have the right team members on my team. We need to have the right people in church, and God's going to provide that. We can't ignore those who have knowledge about a job, and I appreciate people like that. All right. He would later arrange the talents in verse 3. In chapter 3, we get to see that he's going to arrange those talents. You don't have to go there right now. While we don't necessarily see him mark it down, we do get to see it's implied. While we don't always understand who's the best at each job, in a church, we have a good idea. For example, that Sal and Stephen yesterday had that pile of mulch over there. We knew that those guys have a strong back. You guys have a strong back? Close enough. They have a strong back and they could shovel, and we put them to shoveling. But then I saw Brother Metham putting up a light and him using a caulk gun and him doing some of the finer work. And me, I was following around Pastor Brown or doing whatever I was told. We have to find a spot that we're needed, and Nehemiah does a great job of that. And as we look in chapter 3 a little later, you're going to see that he's going to put people in the right areas. And while we talk about results aren't important, we are a results-based society, and most important, in Christian life, we should have results. And I don't mean that if we should increase the attendance of the church, but if someone gets saved in your church, or they make a profession of faith, you want to see them grow in the Lord, don't you? You want to see them start not just going on a Sunday morning, but you want to see them start coming on a Sunday school in a Sunday night. And you want to start seeing them being involved in Bible studies. And you want to see them start being involved in the Bible Institute. And you want to see people start coming on Wednesdays. And you want to see them start getting their hands dirty. And as leaders, we have to see where each person's gift goes. And we have to apply them to the right spot. Only after a person organizes a project, a ministry, and a team does that person commit to the actual work. You know, a lot of people want to get the work done first, but you have to organize first. You have to do that first. Organizing, though, is a continual work. It's continual. You don't stop organizing ever. So anyway, that's enough on the organization section of it, but let's look at verse 9. We get to see a couple bad guys, and then we're going to see a little bit of motivating. So verse 9. Then I came to the governors beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. Then Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it and grieved them exceedingly. And there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. And then verse 17, it says, then I said unto them, ye see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me. We, as also the king's word that he had spoken unto me. And they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. But when Sanballat and the Horonite and Tobiah the servant of the Ammonite and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, what is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king? Then answered I them and said unto them, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and build, but ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. So we get to find out a couple things about motivation. We're going to talk, first of all, about some of the bad guys. We're introduced to the enemies of God's work in verses 10, Sanballat and Tobiah. They will be a thorn in the side of Nehemiah as this book progresses. But Sanballat, the Horonite, is a governor of Samaria. His name means, and I want to take time here to say this, the God Sin. The god's name is Sin, S-I-N. And that's a god of the Assyrians or Babylonians that was found in some of the larger cities. He was a moon god. Have we ever had a problem with a moon god in our world? Just Allah. All right. Sanballat's family had maintained control over Samaria for over a century, during which time its connection with high priestly family in Jerusalem remained close. And then Tobiah was likely a governor of the Ammonite region, and the Tobiad family was closely related to the Jerusalem priesthood, established itself as a quasi-autonomous power in the Ammonite region. With that being said, do you think they had reason to want Jerusalem weak? Yeah, they want Jerusalem weak. Do you think they would do anything it would take to get Jerusalem to stay weak? Of course. Of course they would. With that being stated, it's also likely that a strengthened Jerusalem would mean less influence in the region. This would be a problem for men like them. We would later see that they make efforts to trip up the works that Nehemiah had put. Now, why I state that right away is, I want to say this. You will be faced with opposition for doing the right thing by folks who want to hold on to what they have now. You will face opposition for doing the right thing. And as a leader, it can really be lonely. It can be lonely on top, can it? For Jesus, the ultimate example, was he ever lonely when he was doing the right thing? When you have a young teenager drifting the wrong way, when they're kind of going between two worlds, and they know they should be over here, and they know they should be over here, and they start trying to walk towards the Bible way, God's way, and they're trying to make that commitment that way, and then their friends are going to mock them and scorn them and be after them. And it's a tough thing because they don't want to turn their backs on their friends. And their friends are worried that if they go this way and they're going God's way, that the Bible is going to have influence in their life. Those people aren't going to like it very much, and they're going to go after it. Young people, stay strong in the Word. Sometimes it can be lonely, but it's always going to be the right thing to do. You have to, as a leader, if you want to be a godly leader, you have to understand that people want influence over your life. Don't let just people have influence over your life. Let godly people have influence over your life. Let the Bible have influence over your life. And when you see people like this who are ungodly, wicked people, they're going to try to trip you up. Has there ever been anyone in this church that's tried to trip up somebody because they wanted to maintain the power? No, not here. Not here. We'll talk a little more about that in a moment. But verse 17, when he said, "Then said I unto them, ye see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth in waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire come. And let us build up the wall. Let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more reproached. Then I told them the hand of God which was good upon me." And he lays this out there. A leader needs to know when the right time to reveal his plan. Before he said a word, he didn't say a whole lot of words. He wasn't sitting there telling this guy the plan, that guy the plan. He kept it to himself. He looked with his eyes in verses 11 and 12. He kept it to himself. And it says in verse 16, it says, "And the rulers knew not whither I went or what I did. Neither had I yet told it to the Jews, nor to the priests, nor to the nobles, nor yet to the rulers, nor to the rest that did the work." He kept his mouth shut till he had to promote his work, till he had to show his work. There are times, and this may be the most convicting part, man, I want to talk about ideas, I want to get those all out, but as a leader, there are times when you have to keep things a little close to the vest. And one of my favorite verses is Proverbs 2:11. It says, "Discretion shall preserve thee, and understanding shall keep thee." But verse 12, turn to Proverbs 2. I want to look at verse 12 for a moment. A leader needs to know in the right time to reveal his plan. Nehemiah hadn't told anyone what his plans were. Here's something for us to absorb. We have a group of people that will try to undermine the ability of a leader. A leader has to have discretion when to know and reveal his plans. Verse 12. I'll start back in verse 11. "Discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee, to deliver thee from the way of the evil men, from the man that speaketh froward things." The ability to put wisdom in action and to have discernment will deliver you from the evil man. You notice it's not what the evil man was going to do to him physically. And we talked about sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. That's a lie, because names do hurt. Words do hurt. Words mean things. And when we see here that they'll speak forward things, evil men, when you're trying to do the right thing, will speak evil things about you. Guarantee it. Write it down. You do the right thing. The teenager, when he does the right thing, his friends will say evil things about him. His friends will say evil things about him. When you're a 20-year-old, when you're a 25-year-old, and you're trying to do right, someone will try to talk you out of it. People want to have control and influence in your life. Make sure the Holy Spirit is what has influence in your life. Make sure if godly people have influence in your life. And when you're thinking about plans, you don't have to tell everybody every single thing that goes through your mind. It is not a requirement. Just because you think it doesn't mean you have to say it. And there are moments when you just have to keep things to yourself or in a small, small circle. And then, because you know you're going to get opposition. You know you're going to get opposition. However, the main focus of this is not just avoiding those that would speak evil, but trying to get good people to do God's work. In verses 11 to 15 of chapter 2 of Nehemiah, he actually is looking around and he's looking around at what's going on. And what I like about Nehemiah, about motivation, is we have a different idea about what motivation is in our society. If you go to a sporting event, they got the music. You got the brewer game, they got the organ. Dun 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 charge. And they got this, they got fireworks going off, they have slides, they have all sorts of things, they have promotions, they try to get you all excited. You go to if you'd ever go to like these motivational speakers, they have you hoot and holler. And one of my favorite things that we used to say when we were trying to get ourselves motivated for sales, we'd say, give me a P. Go ahead. Give me an A. Give me an M. What's that spell? Now you're cooking. I think that means I'm ready to be senior pastor if I have a joke that bad. But I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm in so much trouble tomorrow. I'm like... The idea is, there's all sorts of silly ways people try to motivate other people. Do you see Nehemiah doing this? Give me a P! Give me an A! Do you see Nehemiah doing this? Verse 17, this is how boring he is. I said unto them, you see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth in waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Number one, he stated what was true. He stated what was true. Jerusalem was in waste. Number two, the gates were burned. That was true, wasn't it? We're in a country, we're in a world that, you know what, you just need to deceive them a little bit. Because, you know, if you told them all the truth, they wouldn't believe it anyway. You really just have to kind of go and do it. We were, when I was at Wildwood, we're in the middle of a building project. We're putting up a gymnasium. And one of the builders that came to us gave us a really low quote. And he said, man, your quote's really low. Why is that? He goes, oh, everyone knows it's going to go over that. Give us the real numbers. Don't varnish it. Don't just tell us what the truth is. A godly Christian leader will give the truth out. It's one of the great things, you know, after I said that about Pastor Brown. It's one of the great things about Pastor Brown. You don't have to worry about him varnishing. He's just going to give you the truth. When he's preaching, he's going to give you the Bible. When you have someone come to you for counsel, you know that you're going to get the Bible. You know it's not about deceit. You know that it's about this. And when you want to be a godly leader, you better learn how to use the Bible. You better learn how to speak the truth. Because Nehemiah wasn't doing anything fancy. He was just delivering the truth. It was an obvious statement, wasn't it? It was apparent to anyone that was in Jerusalem that you could see that the walls were broken down and the gates were burned. He wasn't coming up with something creative. He wasn't coming up with something clever. He was just coming out with the truth. And in this day and age, the truth is very unique. Truth is very unique. Here's a lesson. Keep the message simple and keep it honest. Number two, he stated why he was there. In verse 18, then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's word that he had spoken unto me. And they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. He stated why he was there. He stated it was a God-given burden. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which is upon me. Your pastor, as a Christian leader, as a godly leader, you have to share what God has put on your heart. As a husband, you have to share with your wife what God has been putting on your heart. As a dad, you have to tell your kids what God has been putting on your heart. As a Christian, you have to tell the other Christians what God has been putting on your heart. It's not magic. It's not ooh-rah-rah. It's just, this is what God is doing in my life. Secondly, it was king had given him approval. As also the king's words that had been spoken unto me. As also the king's word that had been spoken unto me. He had been given permission by the king. If I come around and I start telling people what to do around here, I go, all right, I'm going to need you to do this. Mike, I'm going to need you to wear white suits on Sunday morning. And I'm going to need this and this and this. You know what the first question they're going to ask me is? Who gave you the permission? Who told you you could do it? And if I don't have the backing of Pastor Brown in this instance, I'm without power. I'm without anything. I don't have any teeth. But when you enlist that and you say, look, God has given me this burden. The king is with me. This is what we're going to do. As a pastor, the deacons are with me. This is what I believe God's burden with me, and this is what we're going to do. Or as a dad, God has been working in my life. I'm working with my wife, and this is what we're going to do. In any circumstance, you better be enlisting more than your own help. This rebel without a cause, the lone stranger stuff that only works in Hollywood movies. It doesn't work in real life. You need to enlist other help. We don't do it on our own. I've been given permission. It's a big deal. So the group of Jews saw the need of Jerusalem and the vision that Nehemiah had joined in. Before a group can commit to your leadership, they need to be able to see the need. It was obvious that Jerusalem was not in the same condition as inner glory. It's a shame and probably took a little convincing to show their need of it. You ever have a mess in your house and it's in the same corner of the house and every day you see that same mess in your house and eventually you stop noticing it? Until you know, like, your in-laws are coming over, then it's like, oh man, we better start cleaning. And then it's... We forget things when they're in front of us all the time. Those Jews in Jerusalem, they were probably looking at seeing it. They were just like, this is just our lot in life. This is just what happens. But here someone came in with a new energy and said, look, this is what we had to do. This is what God has given me a burden for. This is the need. A leader needs to show reasons why, and you'll see why in chapter 3, that they are totally committed to taking on the task. It may be that this may be one of the great accounts in the Bible where you get to see unity. How often do you see unity in this world? Almost never. Almost never. We had a work day yesterday. I think it's one of the great things we accomplished. We had many hands. I talked about it earlier. This is the house of God. This is the house that God has given us. I think Brother Strickland mentioned it in one of his prayers this morning or something. And he said, hey, isn't this glad this house that we can be in that God has provided for us? This is the house in which God has provided for us. We have work days to make sure that we keep things upright. If the doors were broken in and the walls were broken down, it'd be a pretty sad existence for us. You know, how would you feel if you were meeting in a dump? You know, we meet in a nice place. God's really provided us a good place. And it makes you feel like you're really onto something. You're really part of a team when you get to see a work day. But as always, there's always opposition to God's work. So let's talk about our buddies, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem. In verse 19, the goal of opposition when you're trying to motivate other people isn't always trying to physically get them to stop. Sometimes it's just about putting a little doubt in their heads. But in verse 19, when Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah, the servant of the Ammonite, and Geshem, the Arabian, heard it, they laughed at us and scorned and despised us and said, what is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king? Notice the pattern. They laughed and scorned, laughed to the point of scorning. I've had people laugh at me. I told someone I was going to be a preacher. They laughed at me. I didn't care. I mean, it was as clear. God had presented that to me as clear as I could be. I was going to be a preacher. I had lots of people laugh at me. You're going to be a preacher. When friends from high school, if I ever come across them, you know what they say when they find out what I do? You're a preacher? It's hard to believe. You're going to do that, and they'll laugh at you. You're going to do that, they'll laugh at you to the point of scorning. They viewed those doing the work in contempt. They despised us. Homosexuals, they despise the work that's going on here. The far left, socialist, communist government laughs and scorns at people like us. The thought police are out, and they want to make sure that you're thinking in line with them. This is a mockery to society. There's movie and documentaries, and there's commentators, and even guys like Bill O'Reilly will say that people like us were extremists. They'll hold us in low regard. They'll hold us in a very small and unfavorable view. Get ready for it. Because when you're doing God's work, it can be awfully lonely. That's why we have church. Because if we didn't have church, no one around us is really a Christian. We would think we're all alone. When you come here, it's wonderful, man. We're all part of the same team. We're all crazy together. Yeah. And lastly, for sowing the seed of doubt, they just told an outright lie. Would someone who opposes the work of God tell an outright lie? Yes. That's why it's so important with you to be honest. That's why it was so important for Nehemiah to be honest. Not fluff it up, not to make a bigger deal out of it. He just said, the walls are broken down, the gates are burned down, this is what God has laid on me, I got permission from the king. He just told him the truth, he gave it to him simple. And when you see a lie here, he says, what is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king? Was Nehemiah rebelling against the king? Absolutely not. Why would someone want to tell a lie? Why would someone want to tell a lie about you? Just to sow doubt in there. Just to make them think, maybe that's not true. There's billboards going up, and I mentioned homosexuality, but it's in the news all the time right now. But they're putting billboards up that says, Jesus affirmed homosexuality, and they'll put a Bible verse down there. Jesus okayed this. Jesus okayed that. It's outright lies. But you know what? They know that the average person is too lazy to actually go to the Bible and look. They're just hoping that people are going to see it and just sow a little bit of doubt in what they're doing. Don't have doubt in what God has for you. Don't have doubt. You know, and it's not just today that they're doing it. In 3 John, if you turn there, doubt is the brother of fear, and they love to work as a team. I'm too nervous to go out soul winning. I'm too nervous to go do God's work. I'm too nervous to tithe. What if I don't have money? My dad says I shouldn't tithe. My. Here's in verse 9. It says, I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loveth to have preeminence among them, receiveth us not. Wherefore, if I come, I'll remember his deeds, which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words, and not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren, and forbiddeth them that would, and casteth them out of the church. You need to watch out for those who are trying to stop a good and right thing. You know, it's up to the pastor, it's up for a leader to snuff things out. Are there going to be disagreements? Yes. Can we be different people? Yes. When someone's trying to subvert the work, a leader needs to squash that out. A leader needs to squash that out. I'm not going to let contention go in my house. I'm not going to let lying going on between a couple kids. I'm not going to let lying go on between family members. I'm not going to let even an extended family member to wedge themselves into my house and divide my own house. I married my wife. The three problems in a marriage, I'm not going to recite them all, but one of them is in-laws. Has an in-law ever caused a problem in someone's house? Has an in-law ever told a lie? The husband needs to vigilantly protect his family and make sure him and his wife are on one team. They have to protect those things. You need to watch out for those who are trying to stop a good and right thing. These were outsiders to the discussion and had no right to speak up. Nehemiah rightly put them aside and ignored their words. Look at verse 20 back in Nehemiah 2. It says, then answered I them and said unto them, the God of heaven, will he prosper us? Therefore, we his servants, verse 19. But when Sanballat and Horonite and Tobiah, the servant of the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us. What is this thing to rebel? And I answered and said unto them, God of heaven, he will prosper us. There we his servants will arise and build it. But ye have no portion, no right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. You have to squash out the opposition. There are times when someone who's just sincerely uncertain or doesn't have the same information as you. You just need to give them the information and work for it. And then there's others who are trying to subvert the work that you're trying to do for God. And there's a difference in attitude, isn't there? When someone's asking you a question because they sincerely want to know, that's one thing. When someone's trying to subvert the work that you're trying to do at church, it has to be squashed out. It has to be moved aside. You got to remove them from the equation. There are people that are trying to stop the work that is going on here. There are people that are going to try to separate Pastor Brown and myself. There are going to be people who separate Mike Strickland from us. There are people, person after person, Satan wants to divide this church. We have to be vigilant about what we put in our ears. So delegating, let's talk about delegating for a little bit. I love delegating. It's one of my favorite things. I love delegating yesterday at work day. My favorite group of workers to delegate to are young boys under the age of 10. I love watching them pick up a shovel. Maybe it brings back childhood memories. As my dad would always say, he'd say, I'm going to introduce you to a little bit of work. He put a shovel in my hand and I would shovel as slow as I could. Anyway, delegating is a wonderful thing, isn't it? And there's a lot of reasons why delegation is good, but for the sake of time, I'm not going to read the entire chapter, chapter 3. But let's look at verse 1. It says, Then Eliashib, the high priest, rose up with his brethren, the priests, and they builded the sheep gate. They sanctified it and set up the doors, even unto the tower of Mia. They sanctified it unto the tower of Hananeel. As a note, Nehemiah 3:1 resonates with the words of Jeremiah. You don't have to turn there. But in Jeremiah, in chapter 31, verses 38 and 40, it says, Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that the city shall be built to the Lord from the tower of Hananeel unto the gate of the corner. And then verse 40 says, It shall not be plucked up nor overthrown any more forever. I love the idea that, you know, here we can see it again. But for discussion, I want to point out that there's no one immune from working or getting their hands dirty. No pastor, no deacon, no teacher, no leader should ever think of themselves as above working. Wow. The first people in Eliashib, the high priest, rose up, and his brethren, the priests. Wouldn't it be a sad work day if you just saw Pastor Brown and myself sitting in the shade, sipping on some lemonade? Would you guys be motivated to do some more work? I think most people would have walked off, wouldn't you? How would you like it if you saw some work need to be done, and it's like, Pastor's like, wow, it's really going to be a lot of work. Keep at it. You want to see a pastor who gets his hands dirty, don't you? You want to see a deacon who gets their hands dirty. You want to be a leader that gets their hands dirty. It's not enough that I tell my kids to work. Do you know what I need to do? Work next to them. There's no greater example than watching your dad work. I love working with my kids. Well, I don't know if they do, but I love working with my kids. And when we're raking leaves, do I expect them to rake as many leaves as I'm raking up? Well, not at this point. Do I expect my kids to do all the hard work that I can? No, but I'm looking forward to the day they can, and then I can sip and drink my lemonade. When you have these kids, you have to train them up. You have to be right with them. You have to wash the dishes with them. You have to show them the proper way of doing it. As when I'm throwing the ball to Reagan, we'll be playing catch in the backyard. He goes, well, why do we always have to do it this way? I said, perfect practice makes for perfect and permanent. And so we try to do it as perfectly as we can, and we'll keep doing it over and over and over. And when we work, we try to do things in an orderly fashion. I love the fact that the high priest wasn't above it. He didn't say, well, I'll pray for you guys. I'll pray for you. Praying can sometimes be a cop-out. I'll pray for you, brother. That means you're not going to actually do any work. Do some work. We're going on a mission trip. It's not that I'm just praying for a missionary. We're going to go see some missionaries, and we're going to work with the missionaries. On the mission trip, it's not just going to be me and Pastor Brown sipping lemonade again. It's going to be us working side by side with people, handing out gospel tracts, knocking on doors, saying hola, and trying to be a blessing to those we're down there with. Pastors, deacons, leaders need to get their hands dirty. I love the fact that in verse 1 of that chapter that immediately you get to see that it's men who are in that role of the high priest or the priest, that they're the ones building it up. Equipping and empowering, no man can do all the work himself. A husband couldn't fulfill the roles of a wife. I'd be a terrible mom. A pastor could not do all the work the deacon does. There wouldn't be time in a day to do all the jobs. It is the leader's job to equip with the right tools and empower them with the right authority in their roles. While the text doesn't implicitly say that Nehemiah did it, it's clear that he set people up for the jobs that they would succeed in. As leaders, we need to set people up in a position that they will succeed. We don't let the pastors in the nursery, thank God. They don't have me running maintenance. They don't have the guy running maintenance running 3M. Mike Strickland's running 3M. You've been knighted. It'd be a really weird meeting, wouldn't it? We put people in the right spots. That's the object. And if they're not in the right spot, you've got to put them somewhere different. The pastor gives direction to what needs to be done and lets them do that. If they're the right fit, they'll continue doing that and they'll do the right thing with minimal monitoring. A leader should be able to tell the team what the boundaries are and where they can succeed. One of the worst things you can do is you just go, all right, it's wonderful, new Sunday school teacher, all right, you teach. You don't provide them the materials. Or when you do provide them the materials, like, well, what do I do? Oh, you'll figure it out. Well, how long do I need to teach? Oh, just until you get bored. Just keep going. You got to give people orders. You have to give them direction. You have to tell them what needs to be done. Look, you guys, you priests, you guys are working on the sheep gate. That's your job. You're working on the sheep gate. You're not busy worrying about the donkey gate or the mule gate or the camel gate, or your job is just the sheep gate. That's what you're working on. That is your job. That is what you're going to do. If you don't provide boundaries, if you don't provide borders, if you don't provide those types of things, you know what happens? People start drifting off into areas that aren't their own. Well, you know, I'm kind of a big deal. I'm a Sunday school teacher, so I'm going to tell you what to do. Mike, it'd be a little better if you did it my way. He's like, who are you? Well, I'm the Sunday school teacher. I'm going to lead music today. No. You teach Sunday school. That's what you do. If you've worked with anyone, you find out that there's someone who gets the Deputy Fife badge and they start thinking they're in charge of everything. You got to tell them that they're in charge of this. Please deal with this. You are in charge of the youth group. You deal with the youth group. You don't worry about college age. You don't worry about home builders. You worry about this. You don't worry about the seasoned saints. You worry about this. But some people get the Deputy Fife the badge and they can't help it. They want to show baby off to everybody. You're pulling the bullet out. You're in charge of that. Stick with that. Well, it's not said there. Nehemiah does it. He tells people to go to certain areas. Leaders should be able to do that. And the nobles, look at verse 5. I love these guys. The nobles of the Tekoites were noted for their lack of participation in the great work. Because I like it. It says in verse 5, but their nobles put not their necks to the work of the Lord. Later on in the book, we get to find out that these nobles will cause problems, I think it's over in chapter 5. And the text goes in line with everyone needs to get their hands dirty. The wrong attitudes here. Look at, they put not their necks to the work of the Lord. We as leaders need to work like everyone else and contribute to the greater good. If the church, our church, so active that we don't know who isn't there, or we just make note of who is. If we kept working as a group, as a church, would we know who's not there? How active are the folks in our church? I could tell you who showed up to visitation in the last 4 or 5 weeks. It's easier for me to tell you who showed up to visitation than who didn't show up to visitation. It's easier for Pastor Brown to tell you who showed up to work day than who did not. It's easier to find out who didn't or who did show up to the work than not. In this case, they actually make note about who didn't show up because it was such a rare thing. The nobles didn't put their necks out there. In the Bible, if there was a Bible book, which won't happen, written about this church, how would your name be portrayed? Would it be like a Diotrephes? Would it be like a Demetrius? Would it be like the nobles here? I hope that your idea is that you will put your neck out for the Lord, that you will do the Lord's work. And that when delegating, the pastor, when he's delegating work out to people, he needs folks to help him out. Every leader needs folks to help him out. It doesn't work that way as being a police officer. It doesn't work that way as in a fireman. Everyone needs other people to help. You'd have a really sad rig if Sal Santoro drives up with the fire truck and it's just him doing all the work. That house would burn down. He would save the basement. The basement would be saved. Brother Scott, it's not like him fighting the whole city of Milwaukee, him and his pea shooter. There's other officers, there's other people, there's other things we do as a group. We can't do it on our own. We need to delegate responsibilities. And all, as a husband, you need to delegate. As a business owner, you need to delegate. As a Christian, you need to delegate. As anything you do in life, you need to delegate. You can't do it all on your own. And the four-letter word that's hardest for us to say is help. I need help. Your pastor needs help. Your manager needs help. Your boss needs help. I need help. It's a hard four-letter word to say because it makes me feel like I'm less of a man. But a real leader, a godly leader, knows how to ask for help and he knows how to delegate. Well, it seems like the majority of those physically doing the work on the wall, by the way, I'm just going to make note of it. It does mention the use of daughters, although most of them were men. In verse 12, the word sons is used numerous times, but we could see the word daughters used in verse 12. In verse 12, it says, let's see here, and next unto him repaired Shelem, the sons of Halahesh, the ruler of the half part of Jerusalem, he and his daughters. I find it unique that daughters are only mentioned once here, but if we're looking at different things around here, I want to say ladies are such an integral part of what we do at this church. Where would we be without the ladies, Pastor? Trouble. I'm not cleaning up dirty diapers. Well, I will if I have to. I'd prefer not. I thank God for people in nursery. They deserve triple their wage next year. I praise God for those that can deal with small children and treat them with care and love and patience. I thank God for those who can counsel with other ladies. I thank God for the women that work here. I want to say, if anything else, I want to kind of bump the men. Men, be men. Step up and do the work. Men were noted all over this chapter as being men, 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 men. Men go out door knocking. Men, be leaders in your home. Men, lead daily devotions in your home. Men, pray with your kids. Men, pray with your wives. Men, pick up where the work is needed at this church. We need more men. Mission trip. You want to know every single person that's asked me about going on the mission trip? You know who it's been? Women. You know who should be asking? Men. Men, ask. Men, do. We need men. Amen. It got quiet. I'm not trying to gloss over that, but I just wanted to say, hey, look, I'm really thankful for the women that are in our church. I really am. We need men. A man that can be an example, that's really powerful. I think about the godly examples of men that I've had in my life. We need more of them, not less. Delegating only works for those willing to be led, and that can be hard for a man. Take the time to do the work of starting up a project. There are many people viewed as overnight success. Those overnight successes almost always have hours and hours and hours of work they put in before they got lucky, quote unquote. These successes, and particularly in leadership, set themselves up for success. We need to learn how to organize. We need to learn how to motivate people. Not the ooh-rah-rah stuff, not the little Pam cheer I said, not having cheerleaders. We just need to motivate them by using them truth, by giving them truth, tell them what God's laying on our heart, and just tell them by what authority we're going in. We need folks like that today. Don't be an overnight success. Be a success that's worth doing. Organize your life. Set a time. A moment here, we're going to pray, and we'll have an invitation and all that, but I just really want you to think. This work only gets done with you. I'm really thankful for all the people that put in work here.